Welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast, where we dive into the many aspects, challenges, and life-changing lessons that are part of our spiritual awakenings. Through conversations, we are looking to bring you wisdom and perspectives so that you feel more supported and connected as you navigate your own awakening path. We are your hosts, Kate McGee and Amanda Richardson-Meyer. We've both been through our own unique awakening journeys that have changed and transformed our lives. And through these awakening conversations, we will be growing and expanding alongside you. We're so glad to have you join us. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to the Awakening Conversations podcast. My name is Kate, and I'm here with my co-host, Amanda. And today we are joined by Katie Valentine, the creator of Soul Forge Coaching, who empowers entrepreneurs and leaders to embrace their spiritual selves in life and business through a Christo expansive framework. A shamanic practitioner, Reiki master teacher, and New Testament scholar, she guides transformative journeys using energetic and shamanic practices, helping you claim the big woo and apply it practically. Based in Ireland, she enjoys podcasting, playing the harp, and connecting with nature. Katie holds a PhD in theology and is an ordained minister. Katie, welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. It's fun to be with this like very global group right now, and listeners too, I'm sure.
Yeah. I just love the many things that I just read there in your bio and the breadth of experience and work that you offer. And so really excited to dive into that and where your life is taking you to be able to create such a bio. I have also had a look at your website, and something that really jumped out at me on your website is a statement that you said, which is metaphysics and faith go hand in hand. And yeah. So I'd love to start here because I think Amanda's has had a religious upbringing. I'm not sure. I can't remember. Maybe. No, didn't come to it from that. But I did. I had a Catholic upbringing. And I think for me, that was not my thoughts on life until later years, that the metaphysics and faith could go together. It took me quite some time, even as an adult, to feel comfortable even saying the word soul and, you know, speaking into the fact that, you know, we have one, it's the work that we do, it's what we're here to learn. So I feel like this is such a powerful statement, which I think must encompass the journey you've been on. So I'd love for you to tell us about this journey of how you've been able to bridge the metaphysics and the faith and what's led you to be able to make such a statement.
Yeah, well, I think what leads me to make such a statement really is my own experience. I'm not trying to provide a theological proof or a long logical argument about this. But I come from a Christian tradition where we actually don't have creeds. We don't have a long list of things that people need to believe. It's really just your relationship with Christ. So our kind of famous phrase is no creed but Christ. And so for me, this is actually not hard because I don't have to sign on to any formal kind of doctrinal statements. I come from growing up, I came from more of a tradition that had a lot of that. So, you know, it's not like I grew up talking about chakras or going into past life regressions. Like that was not part of childhood, part of my church formation or anything like that. But it certainly was as I got to be an adult. And so this all came into my life really when I moved to Berkeley, because you can't live in Berkeley and not do this kind of thing. You know, I was pursuing my PhD, doing something very stupid and pursuing a PhD in New Testament in Berkeley, California. You know, these programs are really soul-sucking, even when you're studying something like religion. They're rigorous and you're not sleeping and you're not taking care of yourself. And so really my saving grace was on like doing this by day and by night, meditating and learning about the chakras and finding other kinds of teachers that spirit was bringing my way. So I used to like write my dissertation for 30 or 45 minutes, and then I would go like play the harp for 15 minutes and then come back and write for 30 or 45 minutes and then go clear my chakras for 15. And so that's literally what got me through the intense years of my dissertation. when I had undiagnosed ADHD. And so these kind of things actually really helped me focus. So I was doing all of the above and not being put in a box from my mid-20s onward. And that's led me to this kind of crazy place of doing shamanism and not feeling like I have to give Jesus up in order to do all of this. And, you know, I know, I'm sure there's many other Christians who would disagree with me. I mean, I know there are. They write to me. But that didn't bother me.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I think that's really fortunate to be able to walk a path where your faith didn't have to collide with what I feel like is for us when we tap into a spiritual aspect of life, you know, a great expansion. Because I think, you know, what you really learn when we are able to understand spirituality more and we have our awakenings is that that part of life is, I don't know, it's like it's not more real. It's like it's the rest of what we, you know, exist outside of a limited way of seeing the world, not only through, let's say, our faith, but, you know, just in general through society. Like so the spiritual aspect to our lives is, to me, the key that really makes it feel so much more fulfilling, more rewarding, more expansive, and really is when we're able to incorporate that into our lives where, in my opinion, things start to really change. And, you know, it is life coming to life. And so, you know, I really think that's such a fortunate thing to be able to walk with them both hand in hand. Tell us a little bit more about your PhD. You've done the New Testament, the study here. Now, tell us about that. What is that?
Okay, so when you get a PhD in New Testament, you spend a couple of years learning like Greek and Hebrew and silly things like that. I mean, they're not silly things. They're actually really wonderful and fun. But you learn all these ancient languages and that you are learning to read and interpret the Bible and other related documents in their ancient context and, for me, how they're relevant or not today. So this is not like a sort of glorified Bible study or Sunday school. This is a little, you know, kind of hard-hitting learning to read in between the lines of these ancient documents and bringing in all sorts of other stuff from the ancient world that influences how these documents were written and how they came to be. So one of my favorite things about this is, you know, Christians these days are very sort of get dogmatic about trying to separate, well, that's pagan, well, that's Christian. And I, you know, when I look at Christianity, I'm like, you cannot understand ancient Christianity without understanding ancient paganism. And the line between them is very thin, if there is one. Right. And so I'm not saying that there's no difference between them, but the more the ancient documents protest, the more that, you know, people were really overlapping in their practices and then their beliefs and how they were understanding the world. And I do think there's something unique and special about the message of Jesus. And there's a lot of collision in the ancient world between what this thing that we now call Christianity and paganism and Judaism and all of the above. So, yeah, so I did that because of my undiagnosed ADHD. It took me forever to finish this degree, but I finally finished after about 10 years. And my goal was always to find a job as a professor. So this trains you to be a professor somewhere. And just looked, I got some interviews. I was kind of the Susan Lucci, like I would be the second pick, but not the first pick of all these institutions. And I finally looked at my husband and said, you know, I'm searching for these jobs that pay very little. And we would have to move across the country. You have a fantastic job where we are. Why am I doing this? And I was doing it because when you're in academics, your identity gets wrapped up in being academics. And you think you have to get this low paying job because it's virtuous. And I thought, I wonder if I can do something else. So then I started Christians on how to become metaphysical and that's expanded into, I don't only work with Christians, but expanded into the shamanic practices and helping leaders and entrepreneurs also get in touch with spirit and their guides and living more in flow. And so I still do kind of academics on the side, which is fun. Once in a while, I'll get a little research in there and publish something. And right now, like I'm in my academic world, I'm working on a volume called Transbiblical, which is on transgender interpretation in scripture, which is really life-giving and wonderful. And that intersects with shamanism in so many different ways. Because so in so many cultures, the shamanic person will be the person who's the third gender or doesn't fit into the gender binaries. So I'm really about breaking down all the binaries we have of spirit, of gender, of people. Like if you feel like you can't fit in a box, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. As was mentioned at the beginning, I didn't grow up with religion, but I grew up in a community where Christianity was very prominent, and I always felt like an outsider. But it didn't really make sense to me. And in terms of like the set of rules that people followed, and I saw this incongruency between like what people, how people behave, and then actually, I'm like, how does that correspond with Jesus? And so from very early on, I was questioning. But to me, I feel like your path is very interesting in that in those years of, you know, exploration, you know, of young adulthood, you got to expand what it sounds like you got to expand what religion could mean by not having it fit within a box. And to me, that seems so much more inviting and freeing to be able to encourage a direct relationship, personal interpretation and exploration. And I think for myself, like I would have been more open to religion if that's how I viewed it. And, you know, I had my own journey in terms of how, you know, my own relationship with Jesus through like ayahuasca, actually.
Oh, cool.
So it's interesting that it's like I spent a lot of time disregarding it. But then through my own personal exploration, it's like I found my way to a relationship with Jesus. So it's fascinating that, and I think a lot of people who maybe grew up in a lot of dogma, it's like they swing the other way in terms of rejecting it, right? And so we all have to kind of walk our own path a lot of times if we're questioning to, you know, question things and do our own exploration. And it sounds like, you know, just not unconsciously, but just how you did things with the harp and with your meditation, it's like you had your own practice to cultivate your own relationship.
Yeah.
So I was just imagining, like, as you're talking, it's like studying like the kind of the brain, the mental aspect of religion, and then going into like these flow states of playing the harp and meditating. It's like, but that seems like a really cool integration of the two, and it seems like a really like cool way to study what you learned and really integrate it in a different way than just being up all in the head, where it's just where I think a lot of us are when we're in school and it's very mental. So that's really cool to me. But can you talk about your journey into shamanism and like how you just how that works in terms of like it all coming together?
Yeah. And so, you know, like a lot of people, I was intrigued with the idea of shamanism. It's a very sexy word these days. And a lot of people sort of claim shamanism in ways that are not always super healthy or integrated, I think. But I had read a few books. I had done a little exploration. I had worked with a few people who had some shamanic training. And when I was in the U.S., I looked into a few schools and they were just never quite right. And a lot of them were drawing from Peruvian traditions, which is fine. But I really wanted to study like on the land where I was. And in North America, that's understandably hard if you're not part of a native tradition. And for very good reasons, native traditions are like not going to teach non-natives about their own shamanism. And many of them won't claim the term shamanism either. Many won't prefer it. So I moved to Ireland 3.5 years ago, and I'd been here right at a year, and I saw a holy ad on Instagram for the Irish School of Shamanic Studies. And it was like one of those very few moments in my life where I was like, ooh, that's for me. I'm pretty sure that that's for me. DM'd the school, and then I enrolled in the class that started a month or two later. So it was a year long shamanic program. And on day one, I sat down and I thought, when we looked at the worldview of shamanism, I thought, I've been doing this a long time. Now I have a name for it. I'm going to have more formal ways to adapt what I've been doing very intuitively already with new skill sets and with a deeper direct relationship with spirit. And that's what happened. So over the course of that year, that's what happened. That was a very challenging year because my husband and I went to Texas after 3 or 4 months of being enrolled in the program to help out with his parents. And like right after we got there, his father died. Then we stayed and helped his mother. And then we had to stay and help my parents. So I was flying back and forth constantly. because I was really dedicated to finishing this certificate program, which I did. And so shamanism has been, for me, a really beautiful confirmation of what I was already doing, as well as, of course, expansion, healing, growth as I've been doing it. So, I mean, it really adapted my coaching. I mean, all my coaching has changed to be explicitly shamanic, supported by other tools in the way that I help people with their transformation now. So the shorthand, that's the version of kind of my own journey with shamanism. Still in to be written, you know, it's still expanding.
And so, like, on your website, it says that you work with people who follow Jesus. And is this, when people come to you, is this their first experience with shamanism a lot of the times? And what do you see? What does it open them up to?
Yeah, often it is someone's first encounter with shamanism, but usually when I'm getting people who are really wanting to work closely, it's not their first rodeo. So they tend to be spiritually mature already, have some spiritual experiences and want some help integrating those and going deeper and getting maybe a little more formalized with what they've been doing naturally and deprogramming and unlearning, you know, all the toxic stuff that we all get from not only Christianity, but other places too. You know, the spiritual movement in general is full of a lot of toxic positivity and stuff, right? So we all have a lot to unlearn, I think, all the time. And so when people are coming to me, often we're creating space for a direct relationship with spirit and we're not building their spirit team. We're creating a space for them to encounter their spirit team. And from a shamanic perspective, to also attract, this sounds so functional, I don't mean it to, but also to create a space for the spirits that want to help them, maybe in a new project, to be revealed to them as well. So if someone is, for instance, writing a book, we might do some journeys to find out who are the guides who really want to help them with this project that may not be lifelong guides. Maybe they're just coming because they're attracted to the energy that this person has, making sure that they're in alignment and kind of answering all those questions. Is this really real? How do I know it's real? You know, that we all have when we're starting this journey. And creating space to hold those questions and to continue on in that journey. You know, whether or not I work with a lot of people who start as Christians and they don't finish as one. And that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. That's not up to me. And one of my biggest lessons has been that Jesus, God, the divine, is working with people all the time. The formal name or label we give to it is, I don't want to say it's unimportant. I do think it's important, but it's secondary. Right? Secondary to their actual experience and their actual growth. So did that, I feel like I wandered. Did that answer the question?
I just want to say something real fast, Kate.
Yeah, it's okay.
Dominate here. But I would say that I've cultivated a relationship with Jesus, but I would not identify myself as a Christian. And so just because...
And how amazing is that?
Yeah, it's very open. And because I can work with other... I don't have to follow the rules as far as like what's... I can have my own experience and not have to... What feels like goes within us like certain guidelines or rule set, which is how I perceive maybe religion. Maybe other people have more expansive experiences than what I interpret. And just because I didn't have that experience growing up with it, that's not a place I would go to. But to have that direct experience has been expansive for me in my own personal journey, and I see that for me, it was pretty life changing. I've had multiple experiences, and they've like fed each other in terms of my understanding and of what that energy is and what, you know, and to me, it's like, oh, it's everywhere. This consciousness. Right. And whether we believe it or we don't believe it, to me, I see that it permeates all aspects of life, but there's also, to me, there's, I don't know, I would say from my experience, like there's that consciousness coming through other forms than just the human that we knew as to be Jesus, right?
Right.
And so that is one symbol of this universal energy that permeates all of life from my perspective.
I feel like you just kind of encapsulated the beautiful parts of the books of Colossians and Ephesians in the New Testament, which have some really nasty parts in them too. Like they have stuff about slaves and masters, women and husbands. But like the part about like the cosmic Christ kind of that we see like in the writings of Richard Rohr, I feel like you just encapsulated that like so beautifully, this, you know, unchanging but adaptable consciousness that we call Christ. Mm-hmm. And lived out in the person of Jesus. So thank you. I'll put you on my billboard now.
I read the Bible, but yeah, it's universal, right? It comes
I'm not sure that's where I would recommend starting.
Yeah, I love that. What was I going to say? You know, I personally, as I said before, I had a Catholic upbringing. So I attended a Catholic primary school. That experience led me to, you know, the end of primary school, saying to my very devout Catholic grandmother, I don't believe in this. I don't believe in God. And, you know, giving her a minor heart attack. And
yeah, I'm sure
she
said some rosaries for you.
Yeah, right. Yep. Prayed for me.
Yeah.
Which, you know, at that time, I guess the way it was being told to me was, I don't know, it just was so hard to get my head around. And just the thing I think that really got me was I had to go to confession all the time, and I was constantly this bad kid, and like I had to think of all the things I'd done wrong all the time. And I think it really just started a set of, you know, thought patterns about this. I have to see what's wrong with me. There's something wrong with me and I don't know what it is. And, you know, through the years, I left it behind, but something always felt like was missing. I didn't want to admit that. And I didn't miss in some ways, like the act of prayer. You know, I would find myself having challenging times through my 20s, and I wanted to pray, but at the same time, I was like, I don't believe in the guy in the sky and all of that. You know, I've come to my own relationship with what I would call God. And as we talked about just then, like, you know, this greater energy, this force, this love. And then through that as well, my own exploration too of understanding who Jesus was, this real human being who lived and embodied what we talk about as what we're coming to all experience, like the Christ consciousness here as, you know, an embodied form through the awakening we're going through the ascension that we're going through, that more of us are coming to know ourselves as consciousness first and foremost. But what is that ultimately? That it is this force of love, that we are all connected. And so I've gone on to read about Mary Magdalene. It was some of her gospels, and, you know, there's only pieces of that. And what I found fascinating was that, you know, some of the things that have been found really show some of the conversations that she had with Jesus were very different to the things that I was told in primary school, but really spoke to the divinity that is us. And, you know, it really helped me make that connection of, or really feel at peace with that statement that, you know, or the idea of my Catholic upbringing that, you know, we are of God, like we are of God. We are of that same loving force because we are that consciousness that's come from God. And so, you know, your work that you do, and you say that you have a Christo expansive framework that you help people with, is this sort of the connection you're helping people make? Like, what is that work that you're doing?
Yeah. So, I definitely don't define it for people. So that's up to them to define it for themselves. But what I do is create the stage and the possibility that you can be in relationship with Jesus and connect to other beings, no matter what you call them. So some people will call them gods and goddesses. Some people will call them higher beings, guides, whatever. You know, I just tend to go with being, with a capital B, because I find that to be easiest. So as both of you have articulated, I share this experience of a universal consciousness that I choose to call God and see in the life of Jesus and in my experience of Jesus now. And that connection for me is easy. It's easy. It's not, it's omnipresent. Like, I don't have to search for it. I'm not saying that it's like, you know, I don't walk around sort of in a blissful cloud all the time. I live a real life, but that's an easy connection if I want to make it known to myself. When I connect with other beings, like other guides, that takes a lot more consciousness. And so before my study of shamanism, but definitely in my study of shamanism, I began really consciously connecting with guides like Bridget, who was both an Irish goddess and an Irish saint, with Buddha, which didn't surprise me. I'd done some study of Buddhism, but it was fun. Buddha's super nice. And then beings like Aphrodite. Well, this one kind of surprised the heck out of me. It's like Aphrodite's real, not just a myth, not just an archetype, right? But like a real energy. And it was actually like Jesus in one of my shamanic journeys, Jesus was like, we have had a lot of time together and it's time to get to know some of these. But like, again, that connection with Jesus, it's always just right there. When I want to connect with Aphrodite, that takes a little more conscious effort and a little more supplication. Is that the right word? A little more like I need to really cultivate that relationship. Mm. I think it's new. And partly I don't see, I'm like looking around. I don't think that she's a universal energy quite in the same way as Jesus, or at least not within my framework. Right. She might be for others. And so that's, you know, what I do with my clients then is help create the possibility that something could be similar for them and create the space. And it's interesting because all these, I don't really tell them about like Aphrodite or anything. And I have a lot of people for whom Greek gods and goddesses come through and they just sort of intuitively know, because other than the myths we read, who really, you know, if you don't live in Greece, who really knows about these beings now? And, you know, a big lesson is, you know, the characters in the Bible, God of the Bible, often are not always portrayed super nicely. That's because humans are writing down their own biases and their experiences of the divine. And the same goes for these ancient other cultures, ancient myths. Sometimes the gods are not presented that nicely, but that doesn't mean that they're confined to the words that are written down. Just like Jesus is not confined to a church or to people who claim to be Christians. So that's what I do with my clients. So I don't tell them how it should look, but create the possibility for them to figure out how it looks for them.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting about the Greek gods and goddesses, because when I think about them, I think of like universal archetypes and, you know, I think of like Jung and the collective unconscious. And, you know, so we're kind of tapped into these archetypes. And so like, I feel like we know them, but we might not be consciously be aware that we do know them. So that's interesting that there's this like familiarity or like a knowing that one feels when they encounter one of the energies.
Yeah, I think that makes it a little easier to identify.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then because often a being might appear to us and we don't know who they are. And it's because we have no point of reference. So sometimes we never get to know, honestly, you know, they're just a woman in blue or whoever. And that's fine. Like, that's fine. They're doing their work. We're doing our work. That's not even necessary. But when we do have a little frame of reference through a myth or through an archetype, it can be easier to begin to identify them. And so I think for a lot of people in the Western world, like Greek, Roman, depending, and your ancestry will form kind of natural points of connection.
Yeah, that's the other question I wanted to ask you, because I think that's really cool and interesting that you've studied shamanism of, I don't know if you have Irish ancestry.
A little bit.
Yeah, but as far as I look at, like, for example, in the United States and maybe Canada as well, there's either like maybe more dogmatic religion or there's atheism. Like, there's these kind of two extremes, but I feel in terms of spirituality and I wonder, like, how much of that is due to this disconnection from our ancestral spirituality.
Right.
And so how was that for you studying the spirituality that's more connected to your lineage than, you know, like you said, you didn't go to Peru to study Peruvian shamanism. Like, how has that been for you? And what insights do you have from that experience?
Yeah. And so just to make sure I understand the question, it's around like my own ancestry and studying shamanism.
Well, like going to Europe, do you have European ancestry?
Rather
for sure. Than like going to South America to study shamanism, that's more, it's like maybe connecting more with your lineage than going and studying shamanism with a lineage that you don't maybe have a direct connection with.
Right. Yeah. And I definitely have met Anglo people, people of European descent who do study like South American shamanism and really benefit from it. So no shade on that. It just wasn't for me.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I imagine that might be a powerful experience, but I just wanted to hear what your experience was.
Yeah. So for me, it was important to study in a tradition with the ground underneath my feet. So shamanism is always, always, always locally and culturally rooted, always. There is a thing that we call core shamanism that when anthropologists began to study shamanism 30, 40 years ago, they identified components of this thing we call shamanism, which is really a Siberian word. It's not like ancient Irish people were calling themselves shamans. they weren't, right? But it's the person who helps people connect directly to spirit within the community. But there's core shamanism are elements of shamanism that are common across time and space and culture. And then as it's practiced in its local space, there's going to be elements that are specific to that geographical location or that people. So that's really fun because I get to study what that is from on the ground where I walk and have some ancestry too. And then it gets a little like fun slash mind blowing when you when beings from other cultures start coming into your awareness. Because then you do have a responsibility, I think, to study them as well as get to know them. But if I'm going to get to know Aphrodite, I need to know how ancient Greeks thought about her so that I'm not culturally appropriating her. Same with Buddha, although Buddha's fairly universal now, right? But if we get to know these deities that didn't walk on the land where we are, we double or triple our work, which if you're into research can be kind of fun. But it's also very time consuming. But yeah, but I think all of that's meaningful. And hell, maybe I have Greek ancestry. That hasn't come through in my ancestry.com test yet. But yeah, I mean, I think it does strengthen the connection I have to ancestors, which is definitely part of shamanic studies and healing as well. So that was kind of a fuzzy non-answer. How was that for a fuzzy non-answer? Yes, it's cool. I could have shortened it and said, yes, it was super meaningful. Cool.
It's all good. Do you find, you know, studying it through a school in Ireland that it connected you more to the land and your choice to live there? Do you feel like that is part of why you felt the call to be there? We had a little chat before we jumped online and you said there's some of it's being revealed to you of why you're there. Was this part of it?
Yeah, definitely. And I felt so at home just in the material, like once I started to study and get some continuing opportunities to advance that. So it strengthened my connection to the land, which was already something that was forming and developing. So from, you know, I love ancient stuff. Obviously, if you study the New Testament as seriously as I did, you have to really like ancient things. So all the times I had visited Ireland before we moved here, I was always taking my husband like to some stone circle or megalithic site or whatever. And I still do that. And so this gave me a new appreciation for perhaps some of the intended purposes. Of those sites and why they were built the way they were. We don't know this from any textual evidence, but using some energetic tools, we can begin to form some more relationships with them. And definitely the relationships of the spirit of the land and spirits in the land that are very, very present here. And so that's something I consciously developed that I absolutely wouldn't have in the same way or maybe to the depth without combining kind of all these forces. So it's definitely been just spirit led the whole way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I do think that's part of the reason I'm here. Whenever we talk about what our future is, are we going to go back to the United States? I'm like, no, I really want to be here, but we'll see what spirit has in store. Yeah.
And so you've spoken a few times there to things being spirit led, and it sounds like this has been a big part of your life. Have you always felt a connection to, you know, obviously you've had, you know, a connection to Jesus, you said. But when you say spirit, do you mean Jesus or do you mean spirit something else? And, you know, have you always had that connection?
Yeah, I definitely have always had the connection. I think like a lot of people, I didn't forget it. You know, I was consumed with being a teenager and a young adult and finding my way and valuing logic. And so I'm one of those people who, you know, I don't think you have to throw out logic in order to be spiritual. I think both can coexist very, very nicely and greatly inform each other. My dog is looking very curiously at a plant. Come here, buddy. Too curiously. Yeah, so that they can definitely inform each other. And, you know, I think I spent a lot of my 20s being, or especially my, early and mid-20s being not that into all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I was kind of into the, like, what did this mean in the ancient world? And that was it. With the presupposition that if we could figure that out, everything would make sense. Well, it turns out you can't ever really figure that out in its entirety. And even if you do, does that really help your life now? Not that much. I tried to quit Christianity and then Jesus would call me back in all these kind of strange ways. You know, I would say, oh, I'm post-Christian. Jesus would say, no, that's actually not for you. And Jesus was like, I actually need people in the tradition who can help reform and expand and live out, you know, values. Okay. And so when I felt the call to become an ordained minister, I thought, like any sensible person, well, shit, this is going to make life a lot harder, because indeed it does. It does not make your life easier. And so that, like, that took a few years in the middle. You know, I was like, while I was finishing my PhD, before I moved to Ireland, all of this kind of stuff. So it's been a slow evolution. And so when I say spirit, I mean capital S, the most broad sense of universal consciousness that a lot of people happen to call God, and that a lot of Christians happen to see in this person we call Jesus, or in the spirit we call Christ. I have absolutely no attachment to like a plan of salvation or a traditional view of heaven or any view of hell whatsoever that a lot of people associate with Christianity. But I think Christianity can and should be much more than that. You know, whether other Christians agree with me is up to them, but they don't get to define what I do or how I see my relationship with Jesus. So I think maybe that's my biggest lesson is about 10 or 15 years ago, I was like, oh, well, the evangelicals don't get to decide what I call myself. That's why, you know, or they don't get to decide what rules I follow or don't follow.
Yeah, I think that speaks to the direct relationship with Jesus in spirit. And can you share with us like the arc of your relationship with Jesus in terms of like maybe where you were when you were younger and like what is your understanding now, both on a metaphysical level and maybe as like who he was as a person? Can you speak to your understanding of who and what Jesus?
Yeah,
big question.
Yeah, it's a big question. And this dangerous territory asking a scholar such a question about who Jesus was. I'll do my best. I'll do my best to keep it non-boring. You know, one of my earliest experiences, one of my earliest memories in life is when I was 3 years old and I would lie in bed and I would talk to Jesus, God. I'm not sure I differentiated them back then, and felt a real closeness. I felt an intensity of that relationship. And at one point it got too intense for me in my little three-year-old self and brain. And I had to actually it scared me and I had to withdraw. So I felt like a lot of my life after that, especially as I've gotten into an adulthood, has been reclaiming that closeness in a way that now is not scary and in a way that now I can handle. And so, the arc of that relationship changes all the time, because I think I struggled with what does the Bible say who Jesus was versus who Jesus really was versus who Jesus is now, if that's even a thing, or did Jesus really raise from the dead or not, or is that a myth? And a lot of that has kind of just flowed away. It's not that I don't think it's important. It's just not important for my current relationship with the Spirit of Christ. But I do love to put on my academic historical scholar hat, which I will now do. And so when we look at who Jesus was, I think if we take away a lot of the mythology, which can be really helpful, but isn't necessary, Jesus was a Galilean man in a backwater province of the Roman Empire who preached something pretty radical that was sorely needed in the time of the Roman Empire. Jesus also was Jewish and came from a long line of people teaching similar things. So Jesus is unique. Especially for those who kind of claim Jesus' message. And Jesus is surrounded by other people saying similar things. So I think they were kind of a collective voice in the ancient world saying, maybe this empire that indiscriminately kills, enslaves, and promotes patriarchy is not serving us. That's a message I can get behind. Then Jesus dies at the hands of the Roman state in a pretty brutal way. And the message lives on. Not always real authentically. All three of us have had encounters with people who we feel like the message and the actions don't align. But we also see that the message of Jesus lives on despite Christians screwing it up. And so who Jesus is now, I got to think, is also changing. Like if Jesus is like our other ancestors, Jesus is evolving and learning and growing and doing new things. And like we're called to be in that kind of, that's a model for me of how to live my life, that I can also grow and change. I don't have to be stagnant, that there's room to keep on working, and that Jesus can be the example and a co-creator in that life with me.
Yeah, that's what I was, co-creator is what came to me as you were speaking. And it's like as you're talking, like all of our relationships are evolving. And as our relationships evolve, there's like this potentiality that changes as a result of the dynamic, like each individual relationship existing, changing. And so it's like where we're going with this. It's not written in a book 2000 years ago, right? It's the potential is present right now. And that like the timeline that we're on is maybe it's like written, not physically, but we don't quite know logically where that is. Like for myself, you know, in my own journey in terms of like me thinking what Christianity is, like I had this one particular idea of it. And then through my experience in Latin America, my perception of Christianity has also morphed as well to see people having direct relationship with Jesus within the context of religion, which has been interesting for me. Maybe I did not see that at all where I grew up. But I remember I went and met my great aunt lives in Puerto Rico, and I was talking with her. It was like kind of after my mom died and I went through an awakening and had a deeper connection, a spiritual connection. And listening to her speak about her relationship with Jesus, I'm like, oh, she actually has a relationship with Jesus. It's not through a church or through a priest. Like she has a direct relationship with Jesus. And that kind of like clicked something in my head where it's like, maybe this vehicle of religion is facilitating connection. In my mind, maybe there's still limitation there, but maybe it is facilitating a direct relationship with spirit, and my own judgment saw it as something else, right? Like I had very simplistic thinking on it in terms of like, oh, you go through a priest and it's not a direct relationship. But to me, like seeing that, I was like, it opened my view. It was like, oh, maybe there is this religion is serving a role in terms of connecting people. And what you mentioned earlier in terms of this new, what did Jesus say to you about the reform of how Christianity is going to be and how it's going to evolve? And so maybe even within those institutions, it's going to evolve to be something that is serving expansion rather than limitation, which is right. What in my mind it was. And so,
well, many are, kind of, right? Yeah. I mean, many are serving limitation and toxicity. But even, you know, there's lots of, I hear people say all the time, I don't believe in organized religion. I'm never quite sure what that means because I'm like, it exists. You don't believe it exists? You don't believe it's for you. That's something quite different, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But in its best state, or when it's healthy, which is not all the time, not even most of the time, but when it's healthy, organized religion brings a group of people together for direct experience in community. And that they can do cool things out in the world, like feed the hungry, clothe the poor. I mean, very, very simplistic, but like at its best, that's what groups do. And they do it better than individuals can do. I cannot go and feed a whole 100 people by myself. A community can, right? And other communities do it too. It's not like only churches. But at its worst, you know, toxic people are attracted to positions of power. And that's true everywhere, secular, sacred, church, police, whatever. And they often do more harm than good, and they often don't do any good. And they often are, you know, people, and they do a mixture. So, I mean, it's really frustrating to me when organizations fail colossally and when they abuse their power. And there's nothing like my rage gets so intense when I hear, see, witness pastors who abuse their power in such ways because they are damaging the most fundamental relationship that someone can have. Between the divine and themselves. And they're like that. It's such a wreck. It's such a train wreck when that happens. So I recently just came back from my hometown where I was for 2 weeks visiting my very elderly grandmother, kind of doing a lot of ancestral connections. So one of the things I did was visit the Catholic school where I had gone to school from pre-K all the way to like seventh grade. And the school has long been shut down. And it came to my awareness right at the time when Kavanaugh was being appointed to the Supreme Court, I also found out that the priest who was there until I was in third or fourth grade had committed sexual abuse. And he's been long dead. But like the Catholic diocese confirmed, like, yeah, it's not a question. We know that this happened. He was dead. So there could be no, like, nothing really to be done about it. And he, like, used to come to my neighbor's house. Like I saw him somewhat frequently. So this felt so icky because I was like, I don't know what kids I knew had experienced this abuse, but it's so awful. And at the same time, that school did a lot of good. The nuns were really fantastic, kind of hardline nuns. And I also met a woman who was really influential, the mom of one of my friends in this setting. And she was very devoutly Catholic. She never missed mass ever, ever, ever. But she also taught me, she didn't believe only like Catholics went to heaven. And she also taught me what it was to be irreverent and hold a sacred life at the same time, which was one of the most valuable lessons I could have had. And she's been dead about 13 years. So I also like got to visit her grave and thank her for that. You know, so we have this messiness just as humans, and we're all going to be caught up in institutions no matter how much we would like not to be, because we're naturally communal and humans are naturally hierarchical. You know, once we get in groups of so many people, their hierarchy naturally emerges. So what do we do with all this? I have no flipping idea. Can we do beautiful things with all this? Yes. Can we do terrible things with all this? Yes. What's going to be my role is really the question within all of that. Samantha, I think I like interrupted your question in the middle of all that.
That's
my
okay.
Yeah,
I was rambling. I just want to say is like, what I feel is that we're moving in a time, we're moving to a place where it's like, you know, from our conversation, I feel like it's easy to swing between polarities. Like we have we're brought up a certain way. We see flaws with it. We swing to the other polarity. And then really, I think it's coming back to the center and seeing that there is positive to both, right? There's positive to questioning. There's positive to being our own people. But there is positive to community. There is positive to being part of a group that has aligned objective. And we're coming to see that, though, you know, when we put people on pedestals, they have their own shadows. And unless they've done a lot of work, when they have that power, it can corrupt. And that's because, you know, we're seeing this more with like gurus and in even like the plant medicine world. Like it's like there's a lot of instances you talk about that violation.
Yoga.
Like that's such yoga. In all of these spaces, people have come to prominence without, like, that they want that power, and then terrible things have had occurred as a result of that. But I think where we're moving is like that is no longer going to be stay hidden, number one. And number two, like, we're all being asked to not give our power away as we once did, right? Like the deferment of our power to a priest or I'm not trying to just like talk about priests, but like pastors, a shaman, a guru,
anyone. Yeah.
Oh, it's like we're playing a role in that dynamic. Like they cannot have that power unless we give them our power. And so I think we're moving away from that model, which has been in place for, you know, a long time.
It's a patriarchal model.
Yeah. Right. And and so everyone's being asked to examine that power dynamic, I think, within themselves. And, you know, where are we not taking responsibility for our lives? Where are we? And if we don't give that power away, they can't have that power. And so it's like, you know, a lot of us are going through these awakening processes and going on these journeys and beginning to just it's coming up for us in our personal lives. It's like, where do I give my power away? And I imagine as this happens with more people, the direct connection with whether it's Jesus, whether it's the other spirits, I think we'll become stronger. And so it's cool that you're kind of, you know, shepherding or midwifing people through this process. Like it feels very aligned with where we're going on a collective level.
Yeah. I love what you said about power. If you don't give it away, no one can have it. And I think that's never been truer in the new models of organizations, have shared power structure, right? And rotating power structure and just a very different kind of power structure. You know, from a shamanic perspective too, there's when someone, it doesn't have to be like the shaman or the shamanic practitioner, but just anyone, when we're in relationship with spirit, we're drawing from spiritual power, right? We're drawing directly from our spirit team. And like, I mean, I don't mean that sounds like, it sounds kind of greedy, like I'm sucking up their energy, but like we all know that's not really how it is, but we're sharing, like there's a flow there.
Okay. It's like everyone who has a dog, I understand.
Yeah. Let me try to pick up right where I left off.
Drawing from power.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we're drawing and sharing spiritual power with our team, all is well. Often people get in positions of power and maybe they started with that kind of relationship, whether it was, you know, whether they consciously know it or not. But then they start drawing from something else. Their energy is coming from themselves, or often they're sucking it from other people or the land or energy around them or whatever. It doesn't have to be like demonic or anything like that, but they're drawing it from not spiritual sources. So they're still being very effective. They're probably still drawing people to them. They're, you know, they have an energy, they're charismatic, they're whatever, but they're, it becomes unaligned. It becomes corrupt. We see this with televangelists all the time. Yeah, I can only think of one or two kind of these big superstar Christian people that are, that feel very authentic to me, because they're drawn on inauthentic sources. They're still powerful, but yeah, it's not very aligned. And I think we see that happen all the time. And like you said, with the gurus, the shamans, the yoga teachers, the whoever. So yeah, the more that we can call that out and invite people into their own authentic flow, the better. And I think this means fewer megastars.
I mean, yeah,
more local.
Go against. I mean, it just feels like for someone to be in that role, there's just some, it feels like there's so much ego involved.
So much.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like I'm always hearing of another guru that has done horrible things to people.
Yeah.
Like, beyond, like, you can't be that thing and also, or maybe you can be that thing and, like, It's very extreme. Like, oh, they heal with someone who, I forget who their name, but they heal with hugs. And yet there was this one just came out, this expose about this guru. And there was this like mafia around, all these people that died around this person.
Oh,
if you spoke out against this person. And so it's like, okay, you heal with a hug, but you also speak out against this person that, you know, people mysteriously die. Allegedly, saying. And so it's living in that duality world still, right? It's like,
yeah.
And because it seems like what you talked about, like you're not taking your energy and your power from source. It's like, yes, siphoning the energy off of other human beings.
Leeching.
It's feeding that ego, right?
Yeah.
It's like, if you need this like extravagant, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like a enterprise almost, right?
Right.
They have this huge enterprise around this spirituality. I don't know. I can't speak for every single one, but it feels predatory in my opinion.
Yes. Yeah. Very. Well, yeah.
And what I'm really hearing us talk to is how important it is for us to then establish our own relationship with Jesus, with source, as you guys were talking, you know, and as you were saying, Katie, the church for me really got in the way of my direct connection, right? And I had to go through the people up the front. I had to repent. I had to do all these things to hopefully be worthy of God's love to go to heaven. And that imprint on me as I've become more spiritual and, you know, connecting with spirit guides, channeling, things like that, I've had to undo that programming that I have to deserve that connection. You know, that was really something that I really had to work through. And so when we're able to maybe move out of the way, the other person in that sense that, you know, has the dogma around how you can connect to God, or you do it once you're dead, you know, that's when you'll find out, you know, if we can take that away and realize that we can all have that connection, we can learn how to have that connection through a shamanic journey, through our own practices, we can experience something very beautiful. As we've talked to, there's this, you know, force that moves through life. There's Christ consciousness. There's the energy of Jesus that is a very loving force, very unifying force. How do we create a relationship with Jesus? How do you think we can do that directly? And I think also what's important for many of us is to take him out of the box that he's been painted in, you know, all of the stuff attached on the outside, and see him for a human who had some incredible things to say. And what I loved about what you said before too is, how many years ago did he live? And we're still talking about him today, right?
Yeah.
He's permeated thousands and thousands and thousands of years and thousands of people's lives, right? Like, there's something about this. So for anyone listening who's like, oh my God, they're having a conversation about Jesus, like, wait a second, you know, like this is just ponder that for a second. But how do we have a create a relationship with Jesus? And what do you think he's really here to, that energy is here to teach us?
Yeah, I feel like the byline should be like, not your grandmother's Jesus that we're talking about. Like, how do you foster the relationship? You just be present to it. One of the things I've been teaching recently is to actually let go of expectations. I think we have a preconceived idea that, especially in evangelical Christianity, like give your quiet time and then you feel God come in. It's supposed to feel like this and you're supposed to have this like wondrous whatever, whatever. Oh my gosh, just let go of all that. Just let it be what it is. That, I mean, really, that's my number one thing that I'm working with people on now, to let go of the box we put Jesus in and the expectations of how it should feel. Mm. Who cares how it should feel? Mm. Just focus on what actually occurs, which could be nothingness. How beautiful is that? Right? You just have like nothing happens. Cool. So you have your meditation, you have your prayer, like however it is that you want to do it, and you just be with it. Mm-hmm. So I think this is part of what I like to call slow spirituality, kind of like the slow food movement. Mm-hmm. That we don't need angelic visitations every time we close our eyes. Right. We don't need burning bush moments. And in fact, I have to tell you, listeners, any of you who have had one of those, they're not easy. They usually come with a really challenging set of instructions. Actually, don't seek those out.
Right.
They mean your whole life isn't going to be turned upside down. They suck. They're wondrous and beautiful, but yeah, then you have to like do all this stuff to follow up. Yeah. I think what we're seeking is just authentic relationships. So the same way that with some friends, I might sit down once a year, we're going to have a really deep heart to heart and it's going to be emotional and it's going to be wonderful. Sometimes we're just like, hey, what's going on? Do you want to get a cup of coffee? So I think maybe taking that approach can be an easier and more fun way to connect with Jesus for people who are seeking them, who are seeking Jesus, or if Jesus is seeking you, and get to know what is the message of Jesus that might compel you. And we can find that in the Bible, sure. But I think we find it better through direct experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that meditation. Yeah. And what Jesus has to offer the world today. I mean, for me, it's still that revolutionary message, like, hey, we can do better.
Mm.
We can do better. Let's do better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this message of justice and of love that continues to compel me no matter how many times I've tried to let it go, which has been many over the years. But that message is too strong for me. And I think it's Thich Nhat Hanh that says most of us are called, like, the tradition that we're born in, not necessarily like Catholicism or a particular branch of Buddhism, but like the general tradition that we're born in is usually the one we're called to stay in. A few people are called to convert, but most people are not, and that Spirit put us there for a reason. So I've held on to these wise words from Thich Nhat Hanh whenever Christianity enrages me, which is like a daily basis. And I'm not really so much within the institution anymore, but that relationship still compels me, and maybe there's other people that it's compelling to.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. And I'll say too, you know, just through my own practice of, you know, connecting to high levels of consciousness, it is about cultivating a relationship. You know, and it's like as you would invest in a human relationship, when we're trying to connect with source, Jesus, guides, anything that is, you know, an energy, it is a practice and it is a relationship. And it is an asking and a questioning and a calling in, and then preparing yourself to receive that insight, that response, that answer in whatever unique ways it comes to you. And yeah, it can be a really beautiful thing to practice.
Well, yeah. Katie, so I wish I had the magic crystal. Hold this crystal. Your connection will be complete. But yeah, that didn't work.
No.
Yeah. Something that I can look back on my own journey is that I feel like a lot of the teachings of Jesus have come through life experiences. When I've been in, you know, the past 5-ish years, and more in the seeking, questioning, curiosity mode of why and of spirituality, I feel like I've been put in situations and it's like, oh, that was to show me the energy of forgiveness and where the opposite is existing within me and how that's been playing out in my patterns and in my programming. Like, very specific experiences came through to show me this teaching that, you know, maybe could be read in the Bible or other methods. But if we're paying attention, it's like we're being shown, I feel like we can be shown lessons and ways of being in our life. Like Jesus is, can be guiding us in our experience. And then if we are inquisitive and we inquire, it's not just that thing didn't just happen to like mess with you. It's like, right. No, that was an experience to see something about yourself, about larger energies at play, and to, well, we can actually heal and rewire these, what I would say are in, you know, longstanding ingrained energies that are quite like biblical in their, like they're in the Bible and they're kind of omnipresent and like throughout the way we are. And like, so where I'm going with this is like, in my mind is like, this is Christianity and I'm not a part of that. And you're talking about like, we're born into these, like, what did you say? Like the religions or the
traditions,
faiths,
yeah,
the traditions. Right. But as I started to see, it's like, no, these concepts are there, whether we believe this tradition or not, like mm-hmm, it's part of right. our consciousness and a part of who we are, whether we align with Jesus or we don't. It's the fabric of our society and our consciousness, like these forces are there. And so I found myself learning about them through my experiences. And I don't know if what I'm saying is clear, but it's almost like the water that we're fish and we're living in water and we don't really know that, we don't see it because right. it's just there. And so becoming more conscious to the water, I'd say, is like becoming more conscious to Jesus. Like Jesus is always, this consciousness is always there.
Right.
It's just whether we can see it or experience it and feel it or not is a difference in how we acknowledge it.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. And it's not like love or justice is unique to Christianity, right? Like lots of traditions and religions and spiritual, but not religious and non-traditions have this as a core value and as an energy in the world. But it's kind of like parents who like, I'm not going to let my kids grow up with screens. I'm like, oh, but guess what? They're going to encounter a screen. You know, you got to teach them how to interact with the screen at some point. It's noble and worthy, but like the energy is going to be there. So we have to learn how to interact responsibly and with high vibration and non-addiction, yeah. all of that kind of stuff.
That middle road, that balance, you know.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for everything you shared. This has been a fascinating conversation. You've provided for our listeners some great resources. So we will link to those in
Perfect.
The show notes and below in YouTube. So for those looking to learn more about Katie's work and spirituality and even some shamanic practices that she's got provided in a PDF, you can grab those. And if you feel called to, you know, explore more of what Katie does and expand your own spiritual practice, spiritual awareness, and even the work that you're doing with people's guides. We didn't even get a chance to chat about that. We should probably do part two. But it sounds like there's amazing work that you're doing. And thank you for the work that you're doing, because I think, as you said, you know, you felt this call to stay where you are, to bridge this gap, to, I think, broaden the understanding of what it means to have faith and also be a spiritual being. And I think you're really walking a path of, you know, really bringing all of that together. So thank you for the work that you're doing and following that call.
Yeah, thank you for the podcast and all the amazing work going on here. It's so wonderful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So thank you for coming on. Thank you, Amanda. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll join you in the next episode.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to your favorite podcast platform or to our YouTube channel so you can be notified when new episodes are released. To learn more about today's guest and view all the resources mentioned in this episode, visit our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and visit the episode page for this conversation. You can also go directly to the episode page by clicking the link in the show notes, wherever you are listening or watching this. Here, you can also leave your questions, comments, or feedback so we can create more episodes that you love. And if you'd like to be a guest to share your own awakening journey with our listeners, or you have a business or offering that supports others going through their awakenings, head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and click on Be a Guest, and we'll be in touch. Until next time, take care.